This episode of Fuel for the Soul is powered by ASICS. Head over to ASICS.com and sign up for a one ASICS account. It's completely free, and when you sign up, you will receive 10% off your first purchase. You'll also gain access to exclusive colorways on ASICS.com, free standard shipping, special birthday month discounts, and more.
Hi, this is Thomas with Believe in the Run.
This is Megan with Believe in the Run.
This is Megan with Featherstone Nutrition.
AKA Feathers. And I think it's stuck at this point. Is it stuck? Like, we've been doing this a while. You've got to be Feathers by now.
Yeah.
I think like it is.
When you walk into Aldi, are they like, Feathers?
It's really actually fairly nice. Nobody knows me around here.
But as soon as you put a sports bra on and run around the neighborhood, they're like, Feathers.
Well, wait, this is actually a funny, applicable story. So my parents live right down the street, and my dad was the other day. My mom was looking out the window, and she was like, "Hey, Randall, there's somebody taking a picture of Megan's house. There's this group of runners, and they're taking a picture." And my dad goes, "Yeah, she's kind of famous." And I'm like, wait, you guys weren't like, "Hey, Megan, go figure out who's taking a photo." You were just like, "Oh, cool. Yeah, that sounds about right."
Was it really somebody taking a picture on your steps?
That's what they said. No, they weren't on my steps. No, they were just like in front
they're
of the house.
Taking pictures of her house.
I'm like,
that's crazy.
It is a little creepy. I thought maybe it would get like DM'd to me at some point, and then it wouldn't be creepy, but I've not seen said picture. So
you got to start hiding your Strava start and finish.
I do. I blur it. Not that people couldn't find me, but.
No, you can do, like, through Strava, you can do.
Yeah, that's, like, the default is it cuts off, like, a quarter mile of the start to finish. Yeah.
You don't want people taking your muffins without permission.
Right?
Next thing you know, you'll have bake sales.
Sneaking into my garage for my frozen blender muffins.
Yeah. Your dog and your daughter will have a lemonade stand
up front. That's cute.
Okay. Anyway,
wait, I got a question. Can I get a question before we jump in?
Sure.
So you're a nutritionist and they try to sell us this dog food that is human food, like in bags. It's like super expensive. Do you buy into that?
So that is one thing I hadn't gone down. We're dry kibble. We're not like the refrigerator, but I am trying to figure out like, what is the best dog food? I was like reading reviews and I'm like, this is a whole different world. You know, like I felt like I had some sympathy for people who look at a gel and they're like, my gel told me to take one every 45 minutes. Why would I do anything else? Like I'm feeding my dog a cup and a half of food throughout the day. Why would I do anything else? I'm just reading the bag. And then I'm like, I don't know. Maybe that's not enough for her. Maybe that's why she's bouncing off the walls and scratching at her bowl. So I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like the way I feel about dog food, the way most people do about like energy gels for running.
Nutrition.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I get it now. I will tell you from experience. Yeah. Yeah. Ralphie will eat as much food as you put out.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure she would.
It's the worst.
Yeah. He's a full-on scavenger right now.
Little fat boy.
Yeah. That's Eva ate till she hurled the other day because she went running around too fast after she ate. And I'm like, gotta let that digest a little,
that's
girl.
That's typical puppy.
You know what? That's what we also recommend. Try stuff when you're running so that you know. She just proved a point. She's like, next time.
Didn't work.
Maybe not so much kibble when I run around.
Didn't work. This is Fuel for the Soul, where we talk about dog nutrition.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the real deal here. Performance nutrition, like we normally talk about. I mean, we do get sidetracked quite a bit, but we'll get into it. So let's start with, we normally chat about products we're trying, and last week we talked about Tim Tams, which. I was also sent a couple DMs that they're available here.
Yeah. I've gotten lots of pictures of Tim Tams on American shelves. So who knew? We have Tim Tams here. I still haven't tried them. Every single person who sent me a picture, I said, buy them, try them and report back. But I haven't heard any reports back yet.
Well, now that I know they're here, though, maybe we will go. We'll try. We'll test some. They look good.
I mean, didn't we see something that looked like a Tim Tam?
Yeah, we were in BJ's and they had... I think it was Nutrigrain, that company, but it looked like a graham cracker covered in chocolate.
Wow. We're going places, guys.
Okay. And before we dive into listener questions, There's a study we want to chat through, Megan. This is a protein study. It was questioning how much protein we can absorb at a time. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, this is a pretty groundbreaking study. I know you guys are all on the edge of your seat here, you know, also reading the research. But taking a step back, a question that we get a lot that is a little bit of an uncommon non-truth was, I heard I can only absorb X amount of protein at a time. So there has been this myth out there that our body can literally only absorb, sometimes it's 10 grams, sometimes it's 20, sometimes it's 25, like insert the number that you've heard, at a time. And that's never been true. We can always absorb and utilize the protein that we're eating. So it's not like we're ever just going to not absorb that protein. It's just taking it a step further. Protein is for rebuilding, recovering, muscle growth, muscle repair, all those types of things. So in the past, we did think that there was a certain amount of protein that could be used to do that recovering, and the rest of it was just used as energy down the line, right? So that protein is very expensive. So we talk a lot about making sure we nail a specific amount of protein at all three of our meals to make sure that we're spreading it evenly, that we're triggering those muscles to repair and recover with adequate protein, but not getting a ton extra, because from research, we knew that making sure that we had enough at each meal was a little wiser than having one meal with just an astronomical amount of protein in it. So that's kind of been what we've talked about in the podcast. That's kind of been the thought as far as protein research went over the last 10, 15 years. But this study came out that is taking that a little bit of a step further and also putting a little bit of a wrench into that discussion there. So what they did was they took 36 males, young males, so aged 18 to 40, with quote unquote normal BMIs. So I don't know how big these males were. And they either gave them no protein, 25 grams of protein, or 100 grams of protein. And they watched them for 12 hours to see how long they were triggering muscle growth repair after a resistance activity. So they put them to the weight room, and then they either did no protein, 25 grams, or 100 grams, and they watched it. And what they found was that 100 grams of protein prolonged that muscle growth and recovery for much, much longer than we thought that it did. So it's really hard to study this as in depth as they did here. So it was a little bit of a like groundbreaking, like, oh my gosh, nobody's ever done this before. So what it's kind of changing things to is like, okay, so if I can't get my protein at three meals a day, is it okay to get a ton of protein twice a day? So it's kind of just throwing in an alternative way of consuming protein that might also be beneficial for certain people. So that's kind of the notion that's out there now.
Can I say that there, like you said, that we can't absorb, like that it's a myth that we can't absorb protein. Mm-hmm. But I find that if I over protein, mm-hmm. and the only way I know I'm over protein, getting too much protein, it's because mm-hmm. I have a side effect from it. I will get body odor if I eat too much protein.
I've had people say that before, or if they go on like a low carb diet and are like increasing their protein, they say they smell different, like their body odor's different. So
yeah, so I mean, is it your body still using it? It's just a side effect is
some of the breakdown. The byproducts of breaking down protein, yeah, are probably what's at the root cause there. So I guess the next thing as I'm reading this research, I'm like, is this changing how I feel about protein? Is this going to change how I recommend endurance athletes consume protein? And my thought is probably not, because these weren't endurance athletes. These were resistance trained young males. So we know we need more protein in a sitting more frequently as runners over 40. So I don't think that's going to change my thought there, right? And then also part of me wonders, we know we need a certain amount of protein to trigger muscle recovery. Was the 25 grams that they're comparing this to even enough for some of these men? So I was trying to find their height and their weight so I could do the math of like, how much would 25 grams of protein be for them? For a 5-foot woman, it's enough. But for one of these male, I don't know. So they told us their BMI, but not
if they're
stats.
Doing resistance training, that means weightlifting, right?
Yeah.
So like, mm-hmm. I'm guessing these guys aren't petite. Like they're going to have a certain amount of muscle mass.
Yeah.
And I think it would make more sense, especially for people that are interested in increasing their muscle mass, to take part in a study like this. So I'm going to guess the volunteers had a fair amount of muscle.
Right, right. And then also taking it a step further from me working with people that aren't great at getting their protein, I struggle to get people to eat 30 grams of protein. 100 grams of protein in a sitting more than once a day. So, of course, I had to, for people who aren't aware, compare that. That's 14 eggs or 15 ounces of chicken or 4.5 servings of the Momentous Whey protein we talk about sometimes or 8 cups of the higher protein Fairlife milk. I mean, this is insane. Like, how feasible is it for people to truly consume 100 grams of protein?
I think I could do the Fairlife milk. 4 cups of milk?
8 cups.
8 cups. 8 cups of the Fairlife milk.
I thought you said 4 cups. Crazy. I'm like, I could probably do that. I could probably do
Wait,
4 cups.
Wait, I don't even understand how they got that in and then worked out. Like,
right. So they used like, I forget what they said, how much it was. That would be 800 milliliters, which would have been 2.5-ish cups of like a protein powder drink. So I think that's how you would have to get it down. So this is interesting, right? I think to me, this brings up a point that like, maybe we can think differently about how we take in protein for recovery. Like maybe there is a little more wiggle room. If we miss lunch, we have a ton more protein at dinner and we're still doing, which in the past I would have said doesn't work. And maybe it does, you know, from this research. But I don't know.
That's unsustainable though. Like
that's
you can't,
my thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of extreme. So, and they mentioned that in the study.
What's kind of funny about this conversation coming up now is, you know, we do the inside tracker stuff and I just got my results back and my cholesterol is always high and I work out and I eat healthy. So I don't know what the hell is causing that to be high. And so I talked to the doctor at one point and he basically recommended I go vegan, which wasn't or vegan or vegetarian, which I don't know that's feasible for me in my diet and my habits to change that right now. But I'm cutting back a little bit. But then I mentioned it to my coach, my running coach, who's Coach Caster. And I said, he's like, no, athletes need the iron and the other pieces that are in animal protein for good recovery.
No, and you're right. If somebody was vegan, this would be really hard to consume this much. I mean, this would be 4.5 containers of tofu.
Soybeans. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
4.5.
You just can't do it.
No, not at all. And they mentioned that in the research study. They said we wanted to do an extreme amount of protein because we wanted to see like what this impact could potentially be. So I don't know that they're necessarily saying that this is what you would have to do. They're just showing that we can recover longer than we thought we could after a large dose of protein, which is cool, right?
I've got a challenge then. Morton found a way for us to get more carbs in to our system. Morton, come on. Figure out how to get more protein into us.
Our recovery shake.
Without eating 8 cartons of tofu.
Right, exactly. How are we going to do it? Yeah, so you know, I think the takeaway, right, is when they look at limitations at the end of a study, and I'm quoting the study when I say they said a final consideration is that we investigated healthy young men following a bout of whole body resistance exercise and do not know if our observations can be extrapolated to other populations or conditions. So this is what's true for all research. It's interesting to know a little bit more about how the human body processes things at different quantities, but it doesn't mean that, okay, we all need 100 grams of protein now, right? So I think it's nice that they said that. So my thought is, how does this translate to endurance athletes? Like I said before, I don't know that this would be the best approach for a master's athlete, honestly. These were young men. They're going to recover very differently than, you know, us as we get older. And then two, just the feasibility of it. And I think consistent intake throughout the day is golden for so many reasons, right? So like not eating and then eating a dose of 100 grams of protein at night. Like, I don't know how I feel about like incorporating something like that. So just, you know, more fuel for the nutritional
fire. I feel
like
that disclaimer is pretty much what you're always saying when we're on this show. Like, we're talking about athletes and people doing endurance sports, not people who are sitting around. Like, we wouldn't recommend the carb intake for an inactive person.
Right. Absolutely. Like, that's why we scale them down when we're not running as much, because we don't need as many carbs. So, yeah.
Okay, should we dive into these listener questions now?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, our first one is actually from Emily Oster.
I've heard of this lady. Doesn't she make blenders or some sort of appliance?
What?
That's Oster. Isn't that an appliance brand?
Okay, that's it. Yes, it is. Thank you. Somebody knew something.
Okay.
You would think Megan's never been in a kitchen, but she's quite the cook.
Yeah, she is.
Okay, so Emily said, my brother and I had an argument over New Year's. The gist of it is that he does not fuel on training runs, like at all. He runs all his normal runs in the morning without eating. In addition, this is wild, he told me that on a 20-mile long run, he would not take any fuel. If it's the summer, he does hydrate, but in the winter, not even any water. He does use gel in races, I guess. Megan, this is bananas. I worked with you for my first marathon, so I know from my personal experience that fueling is so important. But he wanted more data, and even though I love data, this isn't my data area. Please tell me what I can tell him to make him fuel for better performance. For context, he is very fast. A 2:36 marathon PR from a few years ago, and he ran Boston last year in 2:50. Please help me win this family argument. Thank you. Well, I fueled and I beat your brother, so.
Ooh, yeah.
There's your data. I mean, hey, he could have run faster in Boston. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
100%. 100%. I have so much data. I mean,
why wouldn't you? Why would you fight this? Like, what are you fighting when you fight?
Pride?
I think people have like ideas in their mind, and when you like truly think that you're doing everything right and you don't want to believe otherwise, it's really hard to be convinced of it.
But this is an easy one to be like, hey, just go for a long run, see how it feels to take a gel on your 20 mile. I'm not even saying take one every 30 minutes. Take one at the 10 mile mark and just see if you feel a little bit better, and then you're like, wow, I actually did feel wind behind my feet.
Okay, before you give us all the data, I also think that there's people that are concerned with taking in more calories. And so if they don't want to do that, then they won't.
100 calories per gel pack.
But it's a mind thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that don't. And he's gotten away with training and having successful training builds without fueling. So to Meg's point, he's like, why should I? You know, like I can like see where he's coming from.
Yeah. How old he is.
Yeah.
Would be an important question.
I also want to talk about the Oster's jeans. I don't know if that's her maiden name or not, but like I think she's over 40 and her first marathon was 3:17 and her brother's ripping off 2:36s. Like, whew, man, like that's some good genetics on your side.
She also has a very good dry sense of humor.
Yeah, she does. She does.
Like, I feel like I'm in trouble. Like, she could be the worst. I wouldn't want to be in her class because as a professor, she can deliver that line so dry that I'd be like, am I in trouble? I don't know if I'm in trouble or not.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. So, I mean, I don't even know where to start, honestly, with fueling long runs. So there is some notion of things, of reasons why we wouldn't want to fuel a long run. So, I mean, I don't know what his reasoning is, right? We don't know that. But some of the things that are out there is that you'll burn more fat for fuel. You'll recruit more muscle fibers. You'll improve your aerobic fitness. It's better for mental toughness. You can store more glycogen afterwards. So those are some of the reasons that I often hear cited from coaches or like old school runners. Typically, it's who's doing this or someone who was coached by somebody who was in the sport 30 years ago. And, you know, there's plenty of research to combat all of this, right? Like, yes, you're going to burn more fat for fuel, but we also know that when we use carbs, we actually enhance performance even further than when we're running off of fat for fuel. We know that carbs are a faster performance fuel. So are we gaining more fitness from those runs when we have more carbs available? Absolutely. And we have a study, a meta-analysis of 46 studies to prove that, right? So there's plenty of research to back up, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I think, you know, my concerns for people doing this, honestly, are that it decreases our immunity. So we already know that when we go out and do a long run, our immunity drops. And when we do it fasted, it drops even more. So if we're getting sick in a training cycle, you know, how's that benefiting our fitness? You know, so that's always a concern of mine. Another big concern of mine is alterations in hormones, which we're going to see in women before we're going to see it in men. So I do see more men doing this than women, because I think women feel the consequences of it faster than men do sometimes. But there's still research to support that it does decrease testosterone in men. It decreases female reproductive hormones. So that would be a concern, especially if you're doing it every single weekend, training cycles back to back to back. And then two, muscle breakdown. So when we are totally exhausting our body of carbohydrates and all we have left to fuel those long runs is fat, which is going to happen if we're out there, you know, doing a long run without taking any sort of fuel, what ends up happening is our body's like searching for the energy that it wants. So it ends up breaking down more muscle mass looking for those carbohydrates versus just using fat for fuel. So we actually end up breaking muscles down further when we don't fuel some of these longer runs. So those are the concerns that I have around there. Have you guys ever done fasted long runs?
I have. But you know what this reminds me of? There's a parallel. And it's kind of funny because it's gender split. Mm-hmm. So super shoes. Dudes will buy super shoes because they know they'll be like, my legs feel better after a long run. I feel faster. The plate helps propel me. I'm getting a benefit out of this.
Yeah.
And it's hard to talk them into eating or taking nutrition properly. Now, women on the flip side seem to be more open to exploring nutrition as far as how it can improve their performance. But also, we're usually less likely to go, oh, I'll get a super shoe to do my long runs, to do my races, and stuff like that. It's such a weird thing because I feel like they go hand in hand. They're both saying, like, if you have an old school coach, he's going to be like, run in racing flats and don't fuel. And it's like, here it is. We're in the modern day. Wear a really good shoe that's going to help protect your body from the impact of hard training. And give your body nutrition that's going to help it recover after that training. So between the two of these, you're going to have a better performance. You're going to recover faster with the shoes, and you're going to recover faster with the nutrition. So you can be stubborn and be like, I don't need it. I'm super strong. I can do that. Or you could be like, I'm not good enough for those shoes. You know, I don't need to be fancy and spend that money. Mm-hmm. Like, look, people, we're getting to it's 2024 now. Happy New Year. We've got, you know, super shoes. We've got nutrition advice. Get with the times.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. You just, I feel like I need to clap here. He's like, I want to be at this next family function. I love it. But I know Emily, and I know for those of you who don't know Emily, she runs Parent Data. She likes data. When we really look at some of the actual studies, and I can send you all the study links if you need them, Emily, we know that when we are out there training for more than 90 minutes, we're going to be exhausting our carbohydrate stores, our glycogen. So then we are switching to that fat as fuel, which we can't run as fast when we're running off of fat for fuel. So if we are taking fuel in carbohydrate form in our long runs, potentially we can push our fitness and gain more fitness out there, right? Because we don't have to slow down when we're switching and converting and using more fat for fuel. So in theory, we could gain more fitness from a training run that we fueled well to be able to have that fitness available to us on race day. So that's kind of the thought of why should we take it during training, because we can gain more fitness, recover faster, bounce back, you know, not be as sore and all those types of things. So they did one specific study that was very, very well done in cyclists, and they had them ride for 90 minutes between moderate and high intensity, and they had them take carbohydrate or placebo halfway through. So the people that took the carbs had an increase in carb oxidation, of course. They're using more carbs for fuel, so, and a lower rating of perceived exertion, and they were able to sprint faster to the finish. So, I mean, it's all coming down to, like, how do we feel and how is performance at the end? So it felt easier and they were faster at the end because they took carbs partway through.
And that's an immediate response. Yeah, that's not even immediate, talking about the benefits immediate of recovery.
Yeah. Right. So then there was another study, it, like, reviewed a bunch of them, and it was from 2014, and it was all on runners this time, and it was looking at carbohydrate intake during their endurance events, and 82% of the studies showed significant performance improvements when they were taking carbohydrate fueling during these events. You know, like 82%, you know what I mean? It's like, we just can't argue that carbs don't help endurance performance and recovery. So to Thomas's point, he said it much more bluntly and better than I did. You know, I would love to see her brother start training and taking more fuel and seeing how much faster that 250 could have been at Boston. Because that's exactly where my mind goes too. I'm like, if you're this fast without fueling and training, you could be so much faster, you know? So, but maybe that's not the goal for him. I don't know, but I would assume that it would be.
Okay, so Emily, hopefully you can take all of that and give it to your brother. But like Megan said, she also has all the studies. So if you want them.
Hey, are dates mm-hmm. stats?
Are what?
Like, is a date a stat? No, it can't be. But guess what is coming up? National Bagel Day.
Oh, yeah. When's National Bagel Day?
It's Thomas's birthday, January 15th.
Stop. I think we should do a live and just eat bagels in front of people on Instagram.
Could we put a like, candle in your bagel and sing to you?
I would love that. And then, we would have like, what's your normal carb load? How many bagels before a marathon?
I feel like every time I inflate the, I told Smith 12 the other day and I was like, it was not 12. I think it was like 7 or 8. My record bagel eating in 24 hours. Is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
It was 7 or 8. I honestly can't remember now. Yeah.
All right. You have to, for my birthday, I'd request that you eat 7 or 8 bagels.
Thomas, that's mean. I'm not carb loading.
How about if we find 8 people to eat a bagel?
Okay.
There we go.
I bet we can do that.
Okay. Let's answer another listener question here. This is from Ellen. She said, I go to my PCP yearly for a checkup and blood work. I consider myself healthy. I've been a runner for 9 years. I'm a healthy weight, BMI between 20 and 21, run 30 to 40 miles per week, strength train and eat and drink it all in moderation. I'm so frustrated by the canned response regarding my most recent blood work. A few areas were elevated, my cholesterol and my HbA1c. The suggestions for how to address them were to lose weight. I'm 145 and 5'10", exercise more. I run 5 to 6 days a week, or at least 45 minutes on a short run, eat less carbs and more fiber, which from what I learned is not what endurance athletes need. I'm 41 and perimenopausal as well, if that matters. What should a runner do to improve these values? I can't imagine adding in more exercise or losing more than 5 pounds. Thanks for any thoughts you have. Peas and carrots, which apparently I should be eating more of.
Ellen, first off, I love your closeout. And two, this is funny because this is exactly my problem on my blood work that I get. And by the way, if you don't know what a PCP is, it is a primary care physician. She's thrown out lingo there. She's very good. But you just got my inside tracker results. Megan just got hers back, and I'm talking about Megan, not Feathers. And consistently, our scary cholesterol is high. Or which one is it?
The bad. The LDL. Well, the overall is high, which is a combination of the good and bad.
And the funny thing is her brother, Megan's brother, is also quite the athlete. And he also...
Yeah, my whole family. My mom has high cholesterol. Yeah. My brother has high cholesterol.
It's genetic.
And everything else on my panel is fine. Like, it's good. Green. Loaded. Like, goodness. I don't understand this one. And I think that there's got to be something about being active and being someone who is... I'll call us athletes. I feel, you know, we're in that realm, that there's something that elevates cholesterol with somebody who's active, you know, quite a bit during the week.
I honestly think it's genetic. Like, some of us just genetically have a higher cholesterol because I know what happened here. So with electronic medical records, you can put a canned response in. So if somebody's labs come back a certain way, it's going to give 6 ways to tackle something, right? Yeah. So I think she got the canned response here, which sucks and is unfortunate, but our medical providers are so strapped. They're seeing a new patient every 10 minutes. Like, this is just the way it is right now. So it's our responsibility to look above and beyond those canned responses to figure out, how do those relate to us? What do we need to do differently with our nutrition? What lines up? What doesn't line up? So you know, for her, she is. She's doing all the things that we recommend people do to lower cholesterol. So hemoglobin A1C is a 3-month look at our blood sugar. So her blood sugar was a little bit high, it sounds like, just kind of running that way, which to Thomas's point, I do see sometimes when we're training, our blood sugar is a little higher because stress increases our blood sugar. So like when we're on long training runs, our blood sugar is higher and it should be higher. So I actually have seen some people that enter a training block that their hemoglobin A1C kicks up a tiny bit. I mean, it's not going to throw us into like a diabetes range or anything like that. But sometimes I do see there is a little bit of a change in that for some people. So that could be a piece of it. But it doesn't look like she's working out or training, you know, for a marathon. So I doubt she's doing these 3-hour long runs where her blood sugar would be higher. So assuming that that's not a piece of this, there are some things that we can do to help lower it. So without having to lose weight, exercise more, all that kind of stuff, the biggest contributor to our LDL cholesterol, to increasing it, is saturated fat. So she could just take a look at her overall nutrition and find out, like, am I eating something that is higher in saturated fat than it should be? So they typically
don't make me get rid of my peanuts.
There's some saturated fat in peanuts, but it's not like a high. Coconut oil is, palm oil is, any animal fat,
olive
so
oil,
like the skin,
avocado oil. Mm-mm.
No, those are fine. Those are fine. That's why they probably told you to go vegan, right? Is because any animal fat is saturated fat. So oftentimes that's kind of another canned response. However, if we go vegan and use a lot of things with coconut oil, I've seen people's cholesterol increase. So it's really that saturated fat component that can be really important. So the guidelines, the therapeutic lifestyle change guidelines to lower cholesterol, say less than 7% of our nutrition should come from saturated fat to help lower that, which if we extrapolate that out is like 10 to 15 grams for most of us. So if you're looking at a label and it has 8 grams of saturated fat in a protein bar and you're trying to lower your cholesterol, let's push that one aside and look for another protein source. You know, so that's how I would use that information, is like just
one other
gut
question,
checking some of the things.
Yeah.
One other question on it though. So if it's genetic, mm-hmm. which it appears to be, especially in Megan's family, mm-hmm. but I don't know about mine, but nobody's ever had any heart disease or mm-hmm. anything in my, both sides of my family, as far as I know, there mm-hmm. there wasn't a heart attack or stroke in any of it. Is it possible that I could operate quite well with a higher saturated or higher cholesterol reading?
So that's, I think that's what's so important about knowing year after year, has it changed? Like for Meg, when I was looking at your stuff, like it boggles a little bit, but like that's just where you sit. And I know how you eat, I know how you work yeah. out, and I'm like, you're fine. Same thing with you, Thomas. You know what I mean? So I think yeah. it's good to just kind of know where you're at from that risk standpoint. I mean, I have a terrible heart history on my dad's side of the family. So I watch mine like a hawk, and mine's okay now, but my mom's kicked up during menopause. So mine might too, you know? So I think it's good to kind of know our family history and do the things we need to do our best. But again, at some point, it's our genetic risk, you know, and we can manage all the other risks. And that's why we keep eyes on it. So that if at some point we do have to go on a statin, because I mean, that would suck, right? Like it would suck to have to go on one, but if that's what we have to do because of our genetics, like, okay, you know, but I think if we know what our history has done year after year, that's super helpful for a provider to help guide us, right? To know that Meg, this is how you've been for 20 years and you're fine. I'm not going to put you on a medication, you know? So I think there's some use to really being an advocate to get that history for ourselves just as we get older. I'd have her check her saturated fat, and then the fiber piece, soluble fiber, decreases cholesterol, that LDL cholesterol. So that's why they said fiber, which would be obviously oats. That's why they say Cheerios lowers our cholesterol. So all these oatmeal products we keep getting sent, you know, try some of those. Chia seeds, flax seeds, pears, beans, lentils, apples, those types of things would be something to try to add in every day. Okay. And then those are the two best things you could do besides what you're already doing.
And then what about the, so was that all related to cholesterol, or was that also for the
cholesterol?
Okay. So yeah. What about the other side of it? Yeah.
So her blood sugar, and that could be genetic too. So if you have a family history of type 2 diabetes, this might be something you would watch the way I watch cholesterol, you know? So, the way that we can help keep our blood sugar from getting quite so high is just really balanced eating. So obviously, if we're sitting down eating Skittles, not exercising, our blood sugar is going to pop up real quick because it's a simple sugar. It empties from our stomach fast. It gets into our bloodstream fast, so it shoots our blood sugar up. Whereas if we were to sit down and eat whole wheat toast with some peanut butter and eggs on the side, we're getting fat, fiber, and protein, which helps slow down how fast that food empties from our stomach. So it can't rise our blood sugar quite as quickly. So it's like a lower, more blunted rise in it, which would help that overall hemoglobin A1C over time. So I don't necessarily think it's like you can't eat X, Y, or Z. It's just really making sure that your snacks are balanced, that your meals are balanced. And just notice when you do those types of things, does it bring it down? You know, stress, lack of sleep. There's a lot of things that can increase our blood sugar that have nothing to do with how we're eating. So, you know, there could even be some factors along those lines that could be impacting this too.
It's interesting because I want to talk about Inside Tracker for a second, and they are not a sponsor. Mm-hmm. But the thing that has been great about it is I've been doing them now on a pretty regular basis for 2-3 years. And so you have all that data there that I can look at and go, okay, here's where I was before. Here's where it is now. And you can kind of see these trends.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, from my perspective, like I've found it harder both for myself and for clients to get their primary care provider to be able to order some of the labs that we want. Like 5 years ago, if we asked for it, we got it. But like the way insurance is wanting people to bill things and code things, it's like if there's not a clinical indication to check something, like the provider really can't check it for you, right? Which puts them kind of in a hard spot. So I think it's wonderful to loop our primary care provider into what all of this is. Even mine's like, hey, yeah, just go get Inside Tracker. We'll talk about it, you know? So like it honestly is just an easier way and more cost-effective way to do it, just because if insurance isn't going to cover it, it's pretty expensive there too. So, you know, there's lots of ways to look at
that. I do think it's really important. And this kind of, we talked about it a little bit on the last episode of the doctor saying your BMI is too high and that's a problem. You need to get it fixed. And it's like there's a lot of canned responses that I think we just can't take and accept it. Like you have to dig a little deeper, especially as a performance athlete, like the canned responses are almost never going to apply to us. Like they're never going to work.
Your weight's going to be high because again, I'm so strong.
Mm-hmm. You have so much muscle mass, Thomas. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And you know, like I think it's important to understand that role. Thomas is flexing. I mean, like I'm a huge fan of preventative primary care, that type of stuff, right? So like I'm going to go to my doctor to get my order for my mammogram and things like that, right? And that's very useful. But some of this stuff, I just know like that's not who I need to go to help me with these types of things. So it's just kind of realizing, okay, here's the blood work. Maybe I need to go elsewhere to get it interpreted for me as a performance athlete. And then, you know, I'm sick with a cold, I go to my doctor, you know? So it's just kind of knowing like who's on your team for different things.
Well, thanks, everyone. Thanks, Emily and Ellen, for writing in today. And if you have a question that we haven't answered, you can send us an email. I said it wrong last week, by the way. It's fuelforthesoulpodcast@gmail.com, not fuelforthesoul@gmail.com. So if you tried to email that one, my bad.
You probably got an alert.
Yeah.
Something saying that's not – maybe somebody has that.
Or maybe, you might be emailing someone else. Yeah. So don't do that.
I think there is an Instagram handle, Fuel for the Soul, so I bet they got it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You should eat your peas and carrots.
Is that your sign off?
That's it. Good. That's all, folks.
All right. We'll see you all in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Where are we in 2 weeks?
Bye. Always.
Hi, this is Thomas with Believe in the Run.
This is Megan with Believe in the Run.
And this is Megan with Featherstone Nutrition.
why
I went right into our regular one.
Why did you mess it up?
I did.
Do it again.
All right. My whole life is a pool of anger. I mean height, not heroin.
Yeah, okay. I gotcha. We don't keep much heroin in the house here.
Probably a good idea. That'd be a good name for your graham cracker company.
Team?
Mammograms. Oh.